Hey, Lark, I just got the best new earbuds. They're called Et from Studio.com. They're so comfortable and weatherproof.
Hey, I got a pair too. They're my first earbuds and they're fantastic. They come in their own little wireless charger case with a USB cord.
You can charge them anywhere and play them for up to 6 hours on a single charge. And I can use them with my iPhone, my laptop, or even my iPad Pro.
They're Bluetooth and noise canceling, and the built-in mic is great for making phone calls.
And they're pink. I just love them. Did I mention they're pink?
They come in several colors, actually. Anyone can get them on Studio.com. Just use the code KUDZU for 15% off. KUDZU.
Hi, y'all, and welcome to Kudzu Killers, Homicide, and Sweet Tea, where we'd like to share gothic tales of Southern-style murder.
I'm Lark, and that other voice you hear is Kim. Each week, we take turns telling you the gruesome details of serial killers, spree killers, and just plain old mean people that we find interesting, and we hope you do, too. Sometimes quirky and weird, but always respectful.
So sit back, grab your glass of iced tea, relax, and let us take you step by step through our story. And feel free to shoot us a comment on a specific episode on our blog at kudzukillerspodcast.blogspot.com.
Now, let's get on with the show. Awesome. I am so looking forward to it starting to be cooler, and I don't think it's going to be cooler anytime.
Oh, we're supposed to have 70s this week.
Woo-hoo. Oh, I hate you. I think it's still 115 where I'm at, I'm sure. Jeez. And like the humidity is 200%. So.
Oh, jeez. No, thank you.
So, you know, Kim and I both lived where the humidity is pretty incredible. We've told y'all before, we live in Memphis, and the river always makes it pretty muggy and whatnot. And then I lived in Florida for a little while, and Florida can be really, really miserably muggy. And so that is actually where our story takes place today. Mm. I have to tell y'all that this story was really hard for me to research and even to write. And I had to take several breaks to keep from being literally ill. Oh, so... geez. Yeah. So with that warning, I'm going to tell y'all to keep that in mind. It's pretty awful. And I was so surprised how many people really knew about this. So I'm still going to tell y'all about this chamber of horrors and torture in Marianna, Florida. Right outside of Tallahassee is a 1,400-acre institution, originally known as the Florida State Reform School, later known as Florida's Dozier School for Boys, opened in 1900. So kind of keep 1900 in your mind. 3 years after the Florida State Reform School opened, an investigative report to the Florida State Senate said that inmates were found in irons and that the school is nothing more nor less than a prison.
Oh, jeez.
According to an investigative report in the St. Petersburg Times, which is now the Tampa Bay Times. And this investigation would launch a seemingly endless cycle of exposés and fleeting reform. Like, they'd get slapped on the hand, and the next thing you know, they'd be kind of back in the news, back at it again.
Mm.
In its first 2 decades, investigators discovered that school administrators hired out boys to work with state convicts such as chain gangs. Y'all have probably heard about chain gangs, but let me explain. Chain gangs being a group of prisoners, usually up to five, who have to work outdoors outside the prison while they're tied together in chains. Normally, I mean, they actually still have chain gangs in Florida now. They're not chained together anymore, but they're out on, they still call them the chain gang, and they're still out on the highways. And
Well, I don't have a problem with that because
I don't either.
You know, they need to be working and doing something productive while they're in prison, I think.
Well, I don't have a problem with it. It's just that these were children that they were, they weren't there as prisoners either, which, you know, be hooked up to a bunch of really hardened men. And, but anyway, so they do still do that. And a lot of times, if you ever notice when you're driving through Florida, you'll see big signs that say, "Don't stop, there's prisoners on the side of the road." So just a little side note. Anyway, so in 1912, the Jacksonville Metropolis noted an investigation revealing that a superintendent was in, quote, the bad habit of brutally beating his charges.
Really?
Yeah. The article said that, quote, there is no adequate place to care for the sick, and that in the school, conditions are shown to be heart-rending and crowded.
So they had these little boys piled in together and nobody to help them when they got sick or anything like that?
Pretty much, and they didn't care. So the campus, the article noted, was beset by insufficient food and unsanitary conditions. Boys were sent there for rape or assault. Yeah, they were. They were sent there for different crimes, but they were also sent there for skipping school or smoking cigarettes or running away from broken homes.
So they were all grouped in there together, the ones who were rapists and the ones who just were true.
All of them. Mm-hmm. All of them. And they were as young as 5.
Oh my God.
And as old as 20. And they, quote, needed to be reformed. But there were also a lot of orphans that were sent there because they didn't have places in the orphanages at the time. So they just got shuffled there. So there was this big mishmash of kids, right?
Right.
So they weren't there for any crime whatsoever, these orphans.
No.
But they were...
They were stuck in there with these 20-year-old men, basically. You
know, exactly. I mean...
20, you're a man. It doesn't matter if you're in a reform school. You should have been...
I'm really surprised they didn't...
They should have been shoveled over to the prison once they reached 18, in my opinion. But,
right. Yeah. So I don't know why they kept them there. I mean, this is just speculation, but they probably kept them there because they could continue to rent them out to the... state or whoever they were renting them out to, and there was money changing hands. So, you know, that's my speculation why they let them stay there till they were 20. And, you know, who knows? I didn't see anything where the prison would have shuffled them over because some of these kids were sent there by judges.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, you know, there were lots and lots of boys that were there for smoking in school, but basically, or just being incorrigible. But most of these kids weren't bad kids, they just ended up there.
Right.
So, the reform school was created as a refuge for needy kids, but instead of it being a refuge, they were quite often
torture chamber. Basically.
Well, quite often they were raped and drugged, and just you know, there was a lot of sadistic folks back there in that time. But then in 1914, there was a fire, and this killed 8 boys and 2 adults inside one of the brick dormitories. Now, although the fire was considered accidental, the press coverage noted that the fire escapes were locked and that the windows were nailed shut, preventing anybody from fleeing. Now, my understanding was it's right outside of Tallahassee, and Tallahassee is not marshy or anything like that.
Right.
So I don't know why they have mentioned that they, you know, the kids would flee off to the swamp, because there's no swamp around there, not really, but they would set the dogs on them and this and that. So the Pensacola Journal's reporter didn't spare the readers the gruesome details. Now I'm going to read it to you because it's okay.
Yeah, let me just read you it. You want to get it right. Yeah.
So this is exactly what they said. The charred bodies of the unfortunate victims of the awful Holocaust were dragged from the bed of coals and ashes inside the walls of the burned building.
Mm-mm-mm.
They were placed under a tree at the rear of the building that had been killed by the fire. Of most of the bodies, nothing remained but charred lumps of flesh and bone representing the bodies and organs that had been roasted to an unrecognizable blackened mass. Two of the larger ones, however, two of the larger children, retained the shape of the human body with all their vital organs exposed. In none of these people was there the slightest semblance of a possibility of recognition. So that they have no idea which...
So they don't know who was who.
They don't know who was
bodies.
Who. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The entire city and county are horrified at the terrible disaster, which is perhaps the worst of its kind in the history of the state. The Pensacola Journal, November 19th, 1914. Now, they did love ghoulish details back in the day, but I can only imagine, you know, how horrific this was to see in person and to smell.
Right.
If you think about out.
Yes. Not a pleasant smell, right?
Yeah. And hair and all of it. So from the rest of my research, this reporter was probably holding back.
Right.
Just so you know. So trouble continued with each passing year, from reports of inadequate medical care to the murder of two students by peers. Decades later, the school came under even more intense examination when a former school psychologist gave an interview to the Miami News for the newspaper's two-part series on the facility. And this I thought was interesting. The psychologist Eugene Bird told reporter Jane Wood Reno how the student beatings transpired, how they took place. At first, a boy would lay down on a narrow hospital bed, we've all seen those, mm-hmm. and stretch his arms above his head, hold on to the bed's bars, and bury his face in a pillow. Then a staff member would whip the boys with a leather strap, mm-hmm. a 22 inch long, 4 inches wide, and a half an inch thick.
That had to be excruciating.
Well, it's just, you know, the beatings were called paddlings, but they were delivered with the full force of a grown man. And they were said that they would wear out these straps on the boys. I can't even imagine. How do you wear them out?
How do you wear out a leather strap on a child without killing them, you know?
Well, they did kill some of them. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the point. So I just can't even imagine how vicious this must have been, or what a monster the person who did it was.
They had to be psychotic, or a sociopath, or a psychopath, or something, to do this to children. They had to be.
Well, from what I read, from what some of these men tell about later on, and they all say similar things, was that, first of all, it was done by a man who had one arm, and that they could count the seconds between, like, he would take a full swing up and the strap would hit the ceiling. They'd hear it scrape against the ceiling, and then he would bring it down so hard on their back that his feet would, you know, like, shh, backwards, you know what I'm saying? And they would hear that shh on the cement on the ground. So they would hear his shoes slide. That's how hard he was hitting these kids.
Well, and you know, that one arm, if he only had one arm, it was a very strong arm because he did everything with it.
So. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So he would whap that thing up, it would hit the ceiling, and they knew how many seconds before it hit them. And then they would hear that, they would hear the whoosh of the belt, but then they would also hear the slide of his shoes because his whole body was into it.
Well, yeah. Can you imagine the terror of the little kid laying on the hospital bed with his face buried in a pillow? Can you imagine when he hears that? When he hears that belt whipping up in the air, you know, and you know, scraping the ceiling.
Well, I just had a really hard time with this because I'm pretty visual. Right. But anyway, I think we're going to take a break here because we're going to come back with more details on this one-armed man and tell you exactly who he is.
Okay, then.
Be right back.
Fact, over 700 people have been killed by the hands of the police just this year alone. I'm Catherine Sheffield, host of the weekly podcast, A Few Bad Apples. Each week, I unravel true stories of victims whose lives have been affected by bad apple officers of the law. I bring this relevant conversation into the public spotlight because it's a way to provoke change and reform. Not all officers are bad, and in fact, I highlight a positive story at the end of every episode to balance the spectrum. A Few Bad Apples is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Lark, I just got the best new earbuds. They're called Et from Studio.com. They're so comfortable and weatherproof.
Hey, I got a pair too. They're my first earbuds and they're fantastic. They come in their own little wireless charger case with a USB cord.
You can charge them anywhere and play them for up to 6 hours on a single charge. And I can use them with my iPhone, my laptop, or even my iPad Pro.
They're Bluetooth and noise canceling, and the built-in mic is great for making phone calls.
And they're pink. I just love them. Did I mention they're pink?
They come in several colors, actually. Anyone can get them on Studio.com. Just use the code KUDZU for 15% off. KUDZU. Hey, Kim. Guess what time of year it is?
It's Halloween, and we've got a week of creepiness for our listeners.
Yep, October 26th to the 30th, we'll be celebrating our favorite holiday with you, our favorite people.
Each day, we'll have a brand new mini episode of something creepy and crawly for you to enjoy.
So stop in and listen every day, then tweet us for a chance at some killer kudzu giveaways. Cut that out. It's undignified.
Okay.
So thanks, y'all, for coming back to listen to the rest of this truly horrific story that we are bringing to you about the Florida's Dozier School for Boys. It was also called the Florida State Reform School in Marion, Florida, which is right outside of Tallahassee. And we're going to tell you a little bit more about this one-armed man. And this is the man that was really kind of credited with all of the beatings. And his name is Troy Tidwell. Now, remember we were talking about the psychologist Eugene Bird, and Bird named the school officials complicit in these atrocities, that the assistant superintendent, R.W. Hatton, who does, quote, most of this, the newspaper reported, while he said that the superintendent, Arthur Dozier, and future namesake of the school, counted the blows.
So he was there watching this guy do.
Oh, yeah. He was kind of being groomed. Yeah. He was being trained how to do it. Now, the catch here is that there was usually no rhyme or reason for these beatings. I mean, it could just happen for any reason, but mostly at the whims of these sadistical superintendent or guards. And I mean, I didn't see anything about these boys, you know, rioting or rising up or anything that like that. I mean, if you ask me, I think maybe they were too weak to do anything like that, too scared.
Well, it sounds like it. They were malnourished and they were beaten all the time and worked to death out in the street. Yeah. So yeah, they probably didn't have the strength to fight back, even if they could.
So to give a little perspective, by 1956, now remember they started in 1900, by 1956, the overcrowded Marianna facility housed 698 students.
Oh my.
And 128 staffers. And it had become the largest boys' school in the country. And it was still growing. So according to a Pacific News Service story, in December 1982, youth advocates filed a class action federal lawsuit against the state on behalf of about 1,000 children at Dozier and two other reformatory schools in Florida, alleging overcrowding, harsh punishment, such as solitary confinement, and other constitutional violations, to be quite
honest. What is wrong in Florida, girl?
Man, don't drink the water is all I'm going to say to y'all. I mean, really.
No, seriously, I'm sure this happened all across the country, but it just...
Well, I'm sure it did happen all across the country, but at the same time, this was like the one that had the worst reputation and was the fastest growing, biggest, etc. So anyway, so this particular lawsuit said Dozier students, they called themselves the White House Boys because of this house that was where they took them out to basically beat them. And so they called them the White House Boys. And these kids were hogtied. And for y'all that don't know what hogtied means, they had to lie face down on their stomachs with their wrists handcuffed behind their backs and then connected to their shackled ankles. So you can picture that.
So they basically roped them like a cow and tied their legs and hands together behind their back. Right?
Kind of, yes, but they used handcuffs and shackles. Right. So it's even worse. It's really worse. Yeah. Then by the mid 2000s, groups of men who'd endured torture at the Dozier School found each other via Roger Kaiser. Now, he was a White House Boy who helped form the online group and began calling attention to this abuse and their abuse at the schools decade earlier. So he was starting to reach out and find these people.
Right.
And Kaiser said, you know, there's just too many stories, and that he knew of one boy that he had personally saw die in the bathtub, that the boy had been beaten half to death. And Kaiser thought originally when he saw this little boy that he'd been mauled by one of the dogs because, you know, maybe he was possibly trying to escape and the guards had set the dogs on him.
Right.
Then there was another boy that he saw who was dead when he came out of the dryer.
The dryer.
So they had put him in one of those large industrial dryers. I mean, can you imagine?
That's incredible. I cannot believe that. when, I mean, if these guys were still around in the 2000s, when were they at this reform school? This was still going on in probably, what, the 50s and 60s? They were still doing these things to kids?
Girl, this school didn't shut down until recently. Let me tell you. Yeah. We'll get to that in a second. But yeah, okay. This went on. That's why I said it started in 1900, and this has been going on and on and on. So scores of men who are now in their late 60s and 70s have finally come forward to share their life in this horror chamber. And they all remember the same things, and they tell and retell the same stories individually. There's blood on the walls. There's bits of lip or tongue on the pillow. Geez. The smell of urine and whiskey. The way, well, I'm sure they spilled the whiskey on the man that was beating him.
Yeah.
The way the bed springs would squeak with each blow of the lash, and they would say how they would scream out for Jesus or Mama, and that they all remember the grinding of the old fan that muffled their cries as this one-armed man swung that strap. They remember walking into the dark little building on the campus of the Florida School for Boys, barefooted in white pajamas, and afraid they'd never walk out.
Well,
some
of course.
Some of them didn't.
Yeah, some of them didn't. That's just disturbing. It's
like I told you, this was hard for me to write for y'all, and you know,
I just had to turn my light on, and you know how I like to sit in the dark when we do this, but
it's just
disturbing. I cannot imagine what those kids went through.
Well, it's just so. Well, so since 1900. This is where Florida sent their bad little boys.
And some that weren't so bad, who just smoked a cigarette or skipped school. Yeah.
Right. Well, so the boys were dragged.
Orphans, right?
Well, right. They just, you know, they were strays, leftovers, for lack of a better way to put it, you know.
Right.
And so boys were dragged in ones and twos and sometimes three at a time to the White House, and this was a concrete kind of just, you know, square building. And it was also nicknamed, get this, the Ice Cream Factory.
I don't want to know why.
Well, I don't know why. I couldn't find out why, but okay. I kind of have, I mean, we can speculate. I think the boys, it was probably a play on ice cream.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Or who knows what. But anyway, this is where the Dozier boys were whipped with a leather strap attached to a wooden handle by the one-armed man. Sometimes there was a line outside, and sometimes a giant white dog sat there and watched them with a guard.
That's bizarre. But
well, you know, it's just more intimidation and more fear building up, you know.
As if they didn't have enough listening to this kid scream inside the other side of the door where they're about to go.
Well, exactly. So the men, the men now, they tell of being hit more than 100 times with this 3-foot long leather strap. Now, what I didn't mention before is this strap was somehow, they kept making it worse. And at some point, they upgraded this strap and stuffed it with sheet metal. So it must have just been, you know, like cut you to the bone.
Yeah.
So some of these boys were beaten so badly that they would have to have their pajamas and their underwear surgically removed from their wounds if the staff could be bothered.
Just makes you want to take these people and line them up and start beating them with these straps.
Well, I mean, this is why I feel like sometimes what you did, you need to get back, you know?
Right.
And so one building on campus across from the White House was also known by the students as the rape room. So I really don't think that needs any explanation.
No, I think we know exactly what that meant.
Yeah. So their stories truly depict a house of horrors. And I saw pictures of the cold jail. They look like jail cells, these rooms they would take them into. You know, it was like cinder blocks, kind of, sort of, brick, white jail cells. But honestly, there were handprints of blood still on the walls.
Oh, my God.
There were blood on the ceilings from when he, you know, obviously every time you hit that lash, it's going to rip across the ceiling.
Well,
so there were streaks, you know. And, you know, there was another picture of a man who was brave enough to show the scars across his back and on his behind where the strap in the middle had gashed his body open. And there were just like horrific scars that these, I mean, you know, movie people couldn't do this justice. This is real, y'all. Mm. So one of the men, boys, Jerry Cooper, who is 74 of Fort Myers, Florida, who served time at the reformatory school in 1961 as a teenager. He says he was whipped with that strap 135 times.
And I'm sure he counted every one, so that's probably a very accurate number.
I mean, I can't even imagine. Well, the reason he knows, he said he was whipped and brutally beaten until he passed out. And the reason he knows is because it was another child outside waiting on his turn who was counting the lashes.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Well, then it's accurate. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because they're out there holding their breath with every single one and counting every single one.
Mm-hmm. They know they're getting the same.
So there's something else to all this. The newspapers had published a photograph of a small cemetery with 31 white crosses with no names. Mm. And if stories of deaths and disappearances emerged from these men's collective memory, the White House boys began to believe that they were the lucky ones. Now,
yeah, of course they did, because those other kids died, evidently, at the hands of these psychopaths.
In one way or the other, I can't even imagine. So when Troy Warren, not to be confused with Troy Tidwell, who was the sadist one-armed man,
right.
Troy Warren was a student. When he heard of the cemetery, his mind went back to his stay at that school, and he says he and another boy were ordered to dig 3 holes behind the chow hall. Mm. They were drug out there and told to dig at night, and Troy Tidwell, the one-armed man, and another guard told them to make the holes 4 feet deep and as long as a boy.
So they knew.
Yeah.
They knew.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Some 81 boys are known to have died there, but where their remains are buried is a mystery that researchers are now trying to solve. And they actually had some people out there doing some ground search and stuff, but they haven't really gotten very far just yet. And so
maybe they can do DNA testing on the remains, whatever there is there, and do like they've been doing to catch these serial killers and maybe, you know, find some relatives of these people.
You know,
so they can know.
Possibly, I think that's the plan, is to try to bring some closure to people who don't know what happened to their family. Well, they don't know. These boys disappeared from the family, and they don't know where they are or any of this, or they don't know what could have possibly happened. But
well, they probably were told, oh, he ran off, or he escaped, mm-hmm. or
he's a bad boy.
Exactly, mm-hmm. because obviously they didn't give any remains to these people, so they didn't tell them they were dead, you know.
Right, right. So they're all unmarked graves, if they bother to bury them, because some of these little boys were just kind of thrown out there, right? So Florida's law enforcement department interviewed more than 100 people, former inmates, their relatives, and ex-staffers, and heard repeatedly about them being hit multiple times with a heavy leather paddle that resulted in bleeding, stitches, and scars. And, you know, all of this, they're all telling the same story.
Right. So it has to be true.
Right. So it's over and over the same. But the one armed man is the one they all point to during the majority of the beatings. And y'all need to remember, his name was Troy Tidwell, and by all accounts, he would leave the facility, the boys' home, and he'd go off dancing and had a family. And they all thought he was just, you know, the nicest, sweetest man in the world. You know, he liked to dance, he liked to go out, he liked pretty clothes. Wow.
Well, that's what psychopaths and sociopaths, they're able to do that, I think. Pass themselves off as normal to
smiling and charming because, the women.
Well, yeah, you always hear when they catch one of these serial killers or one of these guys that had girls held in his basement for years, the neighbors always say, well, he seems like such a nice man.
Golly.
You know, they always do.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, his name was Troy Tidwell.
So y'all remember his name again.
Troy Tidwell. The bastard we hope is burning in hell.
Yes, maybe may we always say his name with disdain and hope he's burning in hot oil right now.
Well, he is definitely dead, because, you know, he would have been in, I believe he died in like 84 or something. Not in 84, but he was 84. And it's been a long time.
And it wasn't painful enough, I'm sure.
No, I think he probably died in his fluffy little cotton bed, you know. So that's the part that really irks me, is that people that do this kind of thing don't get their comeuppance. But I'm hoping that on the other side, he's getting something.
If there is a God,
parts.
If there is a God, he is, you know.
Yes, so. We're hoping that hot pokers are in the right place to poke. So
That's just awful. Thanks for bringing an awful Debbie Downer story.
Oh, I'm not finished yet.
Finished. Oh my God.
Hold the phone, sister. I got more. I got a teeny bit of good news. In my opinion, teeny. The state of Florida finally shut the school down in 2011.
This has been going on for these boys until then?
I'm telling you, can you even imagine it was open for this long with people complaining and people,
no.
I mean, unbelievable. So after all this is said and done and the state of Florida has danced around any compensation for these boys, now men, right?
Right.
They haven't given them anything, nothing.
They should be. They should be given, well, I don't even know how you would compensate something like that.
Well, they don't, you know, they could definitely do with some money, okay, but right. Also they could do with a whole lot of counseling, because
of course
at least the other part of this is that all of these men have come together and now they're starting to talk about it and they found each other, right? And they claim that their lives have been shattered irreversibly, horribly ruined, and they all seem to exhibit every kind of PTSD characteristic going, right?
I can't even imagine. Yeah.
Right, because they can't live normal lives. They can't have normal trust relationships. They can never feel loved. They can never have a normal life. And I mean, I am glad that they have found some solidarity in reuniting with each other via the man Kaiser on the internet, remember?
Right.
And I'm not sure if it's helped some or not. I hope that it brings some healing, but I'm really afraid it's way too little too late to all of them. And
right. Well, they're in their 60s and 70s now, so they've lived most of their life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
With all these memories and all this fear.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And,
they can never compensate for that.
Well, they've just destroyed their life. So where I'd like to hope that in their next life or even on the other side, they are going to live a happy existence. And so I'm sorry this is such a super sad deal, but, you know, I have to say this is one of those that people asked for. So here it is, y'all. And Kim actually had commented on something else. What were you going to mention?
Oh, well, no, I was just, when you were telling me the story that you were going to do, I actually had heard of it before and I knew about this story. And I don't know if this movie is based on this or not, or if it's just based on so many of these kinds of schools existing across the country, and especially in the 50s through the 80s, I would imagine. There's a movie from 1996 called Sleepers, and I don't know if anyone out there has seen it. If you haven't, you should. It's an excellent movie. It's Brad Pitt and Kevin Bacon and Robert De Niro and a whole big cast of great actors about this very subject. It's about some kids who do a prank that goes wrong and they get sent to this reform school, and it is horrid. So yeah, it's kind of a downer of a movie, but it's very good movie and very, very well done. So go watch Sleepers if you get a chance.
Well, I'm just glad, I'm shocked that they didn't close it down until 2011, but I'm
that
glad it's...
Just, yeah, that I just can't imagine that. I cannot imagine, knowing all this stuff was going on, that they left that place open.
For decades.
Was this all the stuff still going on in the 2000s? I mean, were the beatings, things like that, still happening and kids dying, or, you know?
I think it wasn't a pleasant place to be.
I'm sure it wasn't.
Ever. Because people kept trying to get it closed down, and why they couldn't get it closed down, I don't know. That could speak to some.
That could
some
speak
other
to some
dynamics of the Florida's greased palms, etc.
That's what I started to say. It sounds like some hands being, you know, caressed with a few bills. Is what? That
oh yeah,
like.
that's another Southern dynamic, if y'all.
Oh, I don't think it's exclusive to the South.
No, it's not.
Any
but,
place that's corrupt.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
it all goes back to money.
Yeah. Sadly, I'm sure they were getting money and for having that many children. And you know, those are just breeding grounds for bad things. So,
of course.
So, sorry to be Debbie Downer today.
That was a good story. It was a sad story.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, one that needs to be out there and one that people need to hear, you know.
Yeah, I kind of thought that. So anyway, I hope y'all, I hate to use the word enjoyed, but
enlightened. We're enlightened about
yes, there's the good
the
word.
Situation That's- of boys' reform schools all the way up till 2011. Hopefully kids weren't being sent there because they didn't have any parents or they were truant in school or they were smoking cigarettes. I mean, hopefully that was all in the past by 2011. But
well, they're really sad. One little boy I read about, it was a little boy who he actually asked the judge to send him there. He hadn't done anything but ran away from school. And he had heard that it was like a wonderful kind of place, like camp.
Oh, geez.
And within 2 weeks, he was in that house being whipped.
Oh, gee.
Yeah.
Did he survive? Was he one of them in
it? I think he's one of these older guys that are now in this group. You know, sharing.
Well, hopefully he can, you know, get some kind of comfort from all of the other boys, the men that were there as boys, and understand that, yeah, he did. Maybe his situation at home was worse than what he thought this place would be like. And, you know, and he chose what he thought was the lesser of two evils.
Right. So. And I'm sure the judge just had no compunction because he just didn't seem to have. It just seems very Dickens-like, if you know what I mean.
Oh, listen. Yeah. You know what? Teachers were like that, too, back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
I can remember my dad talking about when he was in elementary school being whipped like that by the teacher because
the
guy was mean. He was just mean.
He
would beat my dad and the other boys for the slightest infraction. It would just make him crazy.
Yeah, kids, I remember the boys being, you know, getting licks. Mm-hmm. That was a boy thing. I don't think they ever hit girls. But
I don't think my dad was talking about just licks. Well, I think he was talking about beatings. And
oh, that's horrible.
That stuff was around back then, you know?
Well, your daddy was a pretty awesome man, but I hate to hear that anybody was ever cruel to him or these little boys. So again, thank you for listening to us today. And we're probably going to have some pretty cool stuff coming up for Halloween. Planning on having a whole week of Halloween-y kind of creepiness instead of our 2 a week.
Regular we're creepiness.
we're looking at giving y'all some double dosage.
It's going to be Halloween sweeps week, and we're going to have a mini episode every single day.
That's right. Halloween. So keep coming back, y'all. And we're so glad that you're showing us some love. And we will see you soon.
Bye, y'all.
Bye, y'all.
That's our episode for this week. Thanks for listening to us, and we hope you join us again every Tuesday for an exciting new episode.
Head on over to our blog at kudzukillerspodcast.blogspot.com and leave a comment or your ideas about the subject this week.
Or follow us on Twitter at kudzukillerspod, and you can shout out to us anytime or send a question for our next Q&A.
Yes, ma'am, and we'd love you forever if you leave us a review on whatever podcast blows your skirt up. We'd love to hear what you think of our new show.
If you'd like to become a part of the Kudzu Killers family, hop on over to patreon.com/kudzukillerspodcast and take a look at the goodies you get when you show us some love.
That's right. And if you love our music, check out Jody Jennings Music on Facebook, SoundCloud, or all social media and streaming music platforms.
So until next week,
or if we decide to shoot out a mini episode,
bye y'all.
Bye y'all.